The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. We're off and running on yet another program. Who knows how many programs we've added up thus far? Hundreds and hundreds. In any event, we're also transitioning here into our new college year at Herbert W. Armstrong College. We're starting our 17th year of classes today. Hardly seems possible. 17 years. I was telling the incoming students yesterday or the day before that in another year or two, we're actually going to have new freshmen that were born after the establishment of Herbert W. Armstrong College. People like my son who were born in that first year of AC. Really pretty amazing how much history we've already put down. We have, as it happens, we have 80 students total at both campuses, so still very small, actually big compared to our history, but of course small compared to any other educational institution. Among the 30, there's 30 freshmen, or sorry, among the 80, there's 30 freshmen. So you can see that the freshman class makes up the bulk of our student body, which is why, as I told them the other day, they need to come along and really step up to the task in front of them right off the start here. We have four freshmen attending here at Edstone for the first time in the 2.5 year history of the Edstone campus. So we're excited to go through some of the freshman courses here on campus at Edstone. Altogether, we have 55 underclassmen, 55 freshmen and sophomores, and 25 upperclassmen. I think we have 12 students. 12 of the 80 are here at Edstone. So I was back in class this morning with the upperclassmen, the doctrines class, which we tape here. We run it live for the 9 students here who are taking it live, and then we send the video back to Edmund as they take the class later in the day. And just I might even touch on some of the things I got into for class this morning later on in the program, if we have time. Well, yesterday, President Donald Trump's press conference at Trump Tower, he came out intending to discuss all of his new infrastructure projects. And yet, as soon as he opened it up for questions from reporters, he got this.
I didn't wait long.
It may have been hard to hear there, given all the crosstalk, but the first two questions that they hurled at him, why did you wait so long to blast neo-Nazis? And of course, his response to that was that I didn't. But she said, why did you wait so long to blast neo-Nazis? And then the other fellow in the background, he said, why do Nazis like you? Why do Nazis like you? That's what the president of the United States has to answer for. Anyone and everyone that voted for him, all 63 million, and if there's one crazy kook among them, he has to answer for it. I mean, he has to say, he has to explain why so-and-so from somewhere, why that individual supports him. Can you imagine? Can you imagine the press gathering in front of President Obama saying or asking, well, why does Jeremiah Wright support you? Why does he like you? Why does William Ayers like you? What about Louis Farrakhan? What about Rashid Khalidi? Never once. I mean, what you heard there right at the outset of the questioning was how it continued for the next 12, 15 minutes or so. Nonstop interruptions. I mean, he was answering back, but the press, they were on the attack. They were on the attack following the explosion of violence in Charlottesville over the weekend, carrying on in that exchange yesterday. Here's clip two.
I wanted to make sure, unlike most politicians, that what I said was correct, not make a quick statement. The statement I made on Saturday, the first statement, was a fine statement. But you don't make statements that direct unless you know the fact. It takes a little while to get the facts. You still don't know the facts. And it's a very, very important process to me. And it's a very important statement. So I don't want to go quickly and just make a statement for the sake of making a political statement. I want to know the facts. If you go back to my, in fact, I brought it. I brought it.
What did you bring?
As I said on, remember this, Saturday, we condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence. It has no place in America. And then I went on from there.
That's President Trump yesterday reiterating what he said, his first statement from Saturday evening, talking about the egregious acts coming from these perpetrators. But he made the mistake, as I've explained earlier this week, he made the mistake of saying that there was violence, that there was hatred on both sides. And you can't do that with the major media because they only want one side of the story. And so that's why the furor this past week. That's why, and for whatever reason, who knows, maybe his advisors encouraged him to come out with, you know, with the gloves on, ready to swing away. But this is what it was, this so-called infrastructure press conference. This is what it was all throughout. Here's another sampling, clip three.
Now, here's the thing, as to, excuse me, take it nice and easy. Here's the thing. When I make a statement, I like to be correct. I want the facts. This event just happened. In fact, a lot of the event didn't even happen yet. As we were speaking, this event just happened. Before I make a statement, I need the facts. So I don't want to rush into a statement. So making the statement when I made it was excellent. In fact, the young woman who I hear is a fantastic young woman, and it was on NBC, her mother wrote me and said through, I guess, Twitter, social media, the nicest things, and I very much appreciated that. I hear she was a fine, really, actually, an incredible young woman. But her mother on Twitter thanked me for what I said. And honestly, if the press were not fake, and if it was honest, the press would have said what I said was very nice. But unlike you and unlike the media, before I make a statement, I like to know the facts.
So there he is bringing up the mother of the victim who thanked him for his comments following the tragedy, something that you didn't hear much about in the major media coverage. The mother of the victim, he brings up this victim, the one that was that was killed by the car that rammed through the pedestrians. But it continued. This is clip four.
They don't.
Listen,
how about a couple
Spencer
of
has praised Mr. you, David?
Mr. Trump,
how about a couple of infrastructure
that
questions?
Event? Was that terrorism?
There he is asking about. Does anyone have a question about infrastructure? And of course, they continued right on. A reporter spoke up, talked about the CEO of Walmart, who evidently said that President Trump missed a critical opportunity to bring the country together. And he reiterates, then the president did, how important it is to make a statement after all of the facts have come in. He made the initial statement, which did not satisfy the left-wing media. It did not satisfy many in Washington. And then he made an even stronger statement, more specific, on Monday, and it did not satisfy. As I said yesterday, the New York Times came out and said, there's a new controversy over the fact that, you know, it took 48 hours for him to specifically label the white supremacists, KKK and such. And then now it's Wednesday. Another couple of days go by. And this is all that they can talk about. This is all that they can think about. Certainly not infrastructure. Clip five.
frankly, people still don't know all of the facts. It was very important. Excuse me. Excuse me. It was very important to me to get the facts out and correctly, because if I would have made a fast statement, and the first statement was made without knowing much other than what we were seeing. The second statement was made after with knowledge, with great knowledge. There's still things, excuse me, there's still things that people don't know. I want to make a statement with knowledge. I wanted to know the facts. Okay.
So he talks about the two statements. He talks then about the driver. The reporters ask here in this next clip, was this terrorism? Is it just murder? Whatever it is. Here's a clip six.
Two questions. Was this terrorism? And can you tell us how you're feeling about your chief strategist?
Well, I think the driver of the car is a disgrace to himself, his family, and this country. And that is, you can call it terrorism. You can call it murder. You can call it whatever you want. I would just call it as the fastest one to come up with a good verdict. That's what I'd call it. Because there is a question. Is it murder? Is it terrorism? And then you get into legal semantics. The driver of the car is a murderer, and what he did was a horrible, horrible, inexcusable thing.
He's a murderer. This was the white supremacist. He's a murderer. What he did was a horrible thing. But at the end of that line of questioning, you heard her ask, what do you feel about this? Is a part of the story as well. His chief strategist, Steve Bannon, I think is his name. Then the president's got to come forward and defend him. Because the press thinks he's racist. The press, as I covered yesterday and the day before, they think the president, in fact, is racist, or at least that he accommodates the white supremacists. Like I said yesterday, I mean, any and every statement that he makes, he could condemn them from now on, and it would not satisfy his enemies in the press, and he has a lot of them. Clip number seven.
Said that the alt-right is behind these attacks, and he linked that same group to those who perpetrated the attack in Charlottesville.
Well, I don't know. I can't tell you. I'm sure Senator McCain must know what he's talking about. But when you say the alt-right, define alt-right to me. You define it. Go ahead.
Well, I'm saying, as
no,
Senator,
define it for me. Come on, let's go. Define
Senator
it for
McCain
me.
Defined them as the same group.
Okay, what about the alt-left that came charging in? Excuse me. What about the alt-left that came charging at the, as you say, the alt-right? Do they have any semblance of guilt? Let me ask you this. What about the fact they came charging, that they came charging with clubs in their hand, swinging clubs? Do they have any problem? I think they do.
Okay, now is where he's crossed the line. You don't dare say the radical left is on a par with the radical right. You can't compare Antifa with the KKK, even though they're both violent, even though they've both caused a lot of death and destruction. You can't do it. I mean, the press today has too much sympathy for the radical left. We saw it over the last 8 years. Like I said, there was nothing troubling about all of the associations that the previous president had. Nothing. Nothing. And if one of his supporters led a movement that caused a lot of violence, or that was aimed at police officers, or that was whatever, certainly President Obama never had to answer for that. But this president has to answer for 63 million people who voted for him. And the kind of attention that stories like this get. This 12, 13-minute press conference, the Media Research Center analyzed the coverage last night of the three major networks in the United States of America. It says here, in a jaw-dropping spectacle in the lobby of Trump Tower on Tuesday, the president went off on the media while ranting about his response to the violence in Charlottesville over the weekend. Trump stepped in it when he appeared to defend the alt-right and double down on his original comments from Saturday. The presentation was originally supposed to be the unveiling of an infrastructure proposal that would overhaul the system. The big three networks, that's ABC, CBS, and NBC, could not get enough of Trump's fiery, furious tirade as he went to battle with the press, and their evening news broadcasts later that day were commanded by the coverage of Trump, minus their commercials and teasers. Listen to this. The total airtime the network set aside for all their news coverage combined was 58 minutes and 38 seconds. Of that total time, they spent 45 minutes and 31 seconds on Trump's press conference. 77.6% of the nightly news last night in the United States of America was on this right here, what you're hearing, these clips and their commentary. 77.6% amid all that's happening in the world today. I mean, from our vantage point, it is a huge story. This kind of hysterical blindness. Because America's going to sleep. The lights are out in America. America is in darkness. Clip number 8.
So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that was a horrible, horrible day. Wait a minute, I'm not finished. I'm not finished, fake news. That was a horrible day. I will tell you something. I watched those very closely, much more closely than you people watched it. And you have you had a group on one side that was bad, and you had a group on the other side that was also very violent. And nobody wants to say that, but I'll say it right now. You had a group on the other side that came charging in without a permit, and they were very, very violent.
Nobody wants to say that. And to his credit, at least he's saying it. It's not going to solve the problems, as you can see. Everybody's just digging their heels in all the more, both sides. There are solutions to this, but they're clearly not in man. Jeremiah said that. Jeremiah 17 and verse 5. Read it. Read the entire chapter. Do you listen to this exchange and think, you know what? I think there's hope here. I think we might have a solution. I think we might be able to heal these wounds. Both sides are giving plenty of ammunition to the other side to grow their movements, to increase their violence. That's just the way it is. God said in Proverbs 14, there's a way which seems right to a man. It seems right on the one side, it seems right on the other. For them to draw a line in the sand, or if you go to a rally and get punched in the face, to punch back. That's what's happening. From city to city, Chicago, Berkeley, Seattle, Baltimore, St. Louis, Charlottesville. Where is it leading? We told you yesterday, go back and listen to that program. You can get all of these podcasts at thetrumpet.com. Look at what Herbert Armstrong had been saying for decades before his death in 1986. And look at what my father was writing and saying even before President Obama came into office. Back when so many commentators in the United States seemed so hopeful. I mean, this was their man. This was their darling in the media. So he was going to solve all of the racial divide. He was going to solve all of the problems between the races. In fact, it got much worse, and it's not going to get any better, not under this president either. So he's talking in this press conference about the fault on both sides, and the press would have none of that. They just won't hear it. Here's what he said, clip number 9.
Go ahead. Do you think that what you call the alt-left is the same as neo-Nazis?
I've condemned neo-Nazis. I've condemned many different groups, but not all of those people were neo-Nazis, believe me. Not all of those people were white supremacists by any stretch. Those people were also there because they wanted to protest the taking down of a statue, Robert E. Lee. So, excuse me, and you take a look at some of the groups and you see, and you know it if you were honest reporters, which in many cases you're not, but many of those people were there to protest the taking down of the statue of Robert E. Lee. So,
some of the context there, and that gets lost in the story, which the media are making it out to be that President Trump is the story, that he has Nazi sympathizers in the White House, including one of his chief advisors. And so he gives some of the context. Here you have what was Friday night, a relatively peaceful demonstration with undoubtedly a mixture of those who didn't want to see the statue removed, together with some from the white supremacy groups. And then the next day, Saturday, more of the white supremacists showing up, as well as Antifa, and these two squaring off. And then we know what happened at the tail end of it, the tragedy. Carrying on in this press conference from yesterday afternoon at Trump Tower, here's clip 10.
This week it's Robert E. Lee. I noticed that Stonewall Jackson's coming down. I wonder, is it George Washington next week? And is it Thomas Jefferson the week after? You know, you really do have to ask yourself, where does it stop? But they were there to protest. Excuse me. You take a look the night before. They were there to protest the taking down of the statue of Robert E. Lee. Infrastructure question.
He goes on to infrastructure. At least he tries to, but he doesn't get very far. But look at the history he brings out. Yesterday, we talked about that statue they pulled down in Durham, North Carolina, of the Confederate soldier. This whole thing in Charlottesville revolved around Robert E. Lee. Next, it's Stonewall Jackson. What about Thomas Jefferson? What about George Washington? They owned slaves. And on it goes. What about more recently? FDR, Woodrow Wilson, Lyndon B. Johnson. Do we remove all references? Or street signs, or statues of these individuals in America's history? Well, he comes back to that, but he said there at the end of that clip, okay, on to infrastructure. He touches on that here again. This is in the next clip, clip 11.
Robert E. Lee, infrastructure question. Go ahead.
Should statues of Robert E. Lee stay up?
I would say that's up to a local town, community, or the federal government, depending on where it is located.
Are you against the Confederacy?
How concerned are you about race relations in America? And do you think things have gotten worse or better since you took office?
I think they've gotten better or the same. Look, they've been frayed for a long time. And you can ask President Obama about that because he'd make speeches about it.
Here again, he gives a bit of the truth that they don't want to hear. Look, the relations have been bad for a long time. And go ask President Obama about that. But before that, should this statue stay up? I mean, in their minds, it's clear that it should come down. Unless the statue was a Democrat, then it can stay up. If he was a slave-owning Democrat, it can stay up. But these others, I mean, it's obvious what we should do. Of course we should tear it down. That's the way they think. And then to ask the President of the United States, are you against the Confederacy? Are you the Confederacy? Which political party supported the Confederacy primarily? Well, go back and look at the history. If they want to be so selective in the history that they pull up, they better be careful. Because you look at their own history, the Democrat Party, you look at its own history, and it's not a very pretty picture. Certainly not with respect to race relations. Are you against the Confederacy? They asked President Trump. Clip 12.
Are you putting what you're calling the alt-left and white supremacists on the same moral plane?
I'm not putting anybody on a moral plane. What I'm saying is this. You had a group on one side and you had a group on the other, and they came at each other with clubs, and it was vicious, and it was horrible, and it was a horrible thing to watch. But there is another side. There was a group on this side, you can call them the left, you've just called them the left, that came violently attacking the other group. So you can say what you want, but that's the way it is.
It was on both sides. He said there, you called them the left. In fact, if you heard what she asked, it was just like the previous reporter. They actually didn't call it the alt-left. They said, are you putting what you call the alt-left and white supremacists on the same moral plane? So on the other side, obviously, they're all white supremacists. It's all the alt-right. But now you bring up alt-left. What you call as alt-left, are you saying they're as bad as the KKK? Because for so many of them, there's a few exceptions. I'll come to that in a second. But for so many of them, There is no alt-left. There's just the progressive movement, and maybe a few on the fringe, that might get into a little bit of violence. And when they do, they're usually cheered on, at worst, or at best, it's ignored. Just like it was ignored in Seattle, in Chicago, in Berkeley. He brings out, look, both sides were guilty here. And that's what he said Saturday. So he's doubling down on that. And so is the major media. Both sides carrying clubs, in the case of Antifa, vicious, vicious activity. And all of it is to be condemned. All of it's racism. All of it's evil. And look at what it resulted in. It's a horrible, horrible tragedy, as President Trump himself said multiple times yesterday. This, however, this part of the exchange, the fact that it was such a horrible tragedy, wouldn't you know it, that's what the three big networks left off. 77% of their coverage last night was on this 12 or 13 minute exchange. But conveniently enough for them, where he denounced and condemned both sides, and in particular the neo-Nazis, and in particular the white supremacists, even calling them out by name, that was scrubbed from the coverage. Clip number 13.
Sir, you said there was hatred, there was violence on both sides.
I do think there's blame. Yes, I think there's blame on both sides. You look at both sides. I think there's blame on both sides, and I have no doubt about it, and you don't have any doubt about it either.
And
if you reported it accurately, you would say.
You don't have any doubt about it either. In fact, there was a New York Times reporter on the scene. I forget what it was she said. I think it's later on in my notes here. She was on the scene and she tweeted out the hard left seemed as hate-filled as the alt-right. That's a New York Times reporter. She says, I saw club-wielding Antifa beating white nationalists being led out of the park. And guess what she later did? She later revised her tweet, saying that, well, I meant to say they were a little bit violent, but they were not hate-filled. They didn't have hatred. They were just caught up in violent activity. There was nothing motivating it. Certainly not hate toward whites. Certainly not hate toward the other side. She changed the tweet. Why? Well, you can draw your own, I think, fairly simple conclusions from that. There's a whole media complex here that only wants Americans and the rest of the world to get one side of the story. And look, it's dangerous where this is leading. They're the ones throwing fuel on this fire. There's plenty to condemn on both sides, and that's what the president of the United States was doing yesterday. But what's frightening, and my father's brought this out, the Winston Churchill booklet and a number of other writings, the America Under Attack and so on, Great Again, more recently, is this major media conglomerate is just pouring fuel on this raging inferno. He goes on to talk about the latest craze on the left to remove these statues. This is clip 14.
And you had some very bad people in that group, but you also had people that were very fine people on both sides. You had people in that group, excuse me, I saw the same pictures as you did. You had people in that group that were there to protest the taking down of, to them, a very, very important statue and the renaming of a park from Robert E. Lee to another name.
No,
George Washington was a slave owner. Was George Washington a slave owner? So will George Washington now lose his status? Are we going to take down statues to George Washington? How about Thomas Jefferson? What do you think of Thomas Jefferson? You like him? Okay, good. Are we going to take down the statue? Because he was a major slave owner. Now, are we going to take down his statue? So you know what? It's fine. You're changing history. You're changing culture. And you had people, and I'm not talking about the neo-Nazis and the white nationalists, because they should be condemned totally. But you had many people in that group other than neo-Nazis and white nationalists, okay? And the press has treated them absolutely unfairly. Now, in the other group also, you had some fine people, but you also had troublemakers, and you see them come with the black outfits and with the helmets and with the baseball bats. You had a lot of bad people in the other group too.
Following that, and you just heard him say it, I'm not defending or justifying anything that happened on the extreme on either side, but you had some people that were there protesting the removal of the lawfully and peacefully protesting the removal of this statue and the renaming of this park. And following that spiel there by the president, a reporter spoke up and then said, well, do you feel like the press is treating white nationalists unfairly? Do you feel like we're treating the KKK unfairly? That was the question. And then finally, just one last clip from this wild exchange yesterday between the president and all of these reporters at Trump Tower. This is clip number 15.
There were people in that rally, and I looked the night before. If you look, they were people protesting very quietly the taking down of the statue of Robert E. Lee. I'm sure in that group there were some bad ones. The following day, it looked like they had some rough, bad people, neo-Nazis, white nationalists, whatever you want to call them. But you had a lot of people in that group that were there to innocently protest and very legally protest because, you know, I don't know if you know, they had a permit. The other group didn't have a permit. So I only tell you this. There are two sides to a story. I thought what took place was a horrible moment for our country.
A horrible moment, as it certainly was. But just to relate some of the facts, both sides of the story, as he said repeatedly, here's what happened. I saw it, you saw it. And so why not report on all of it? Why not report the facts? You're reporters, after all. You want to know what the craziest thing the President of the United States said during that press conference yesterday? He wrapped up his comments, and as he was exiting the room, one of the reporters asked, what do you think needs to be done to overcome the racial divides in this country? And he said that he thought jobs would have a huge impact. He thought jobs, more jobs, would heal the racial divide. And of course, he couldn't be more wrong, could he? As I discussed with you yesterday, all of these prophecies, Isaiah 1, Ezekiel 4, Ezekiel 5, Revelation 24, Matthew 24. The book of Revelation, of course, talks about the rise of the beast power, enemies from without. But what about all of the enemies from within? They're rising up. They're rising up right in front of our eyes. And you have one individual that says, look, I can see it. I saw it. I saw how vile and evil both sides were. And you have those that are reporting on all of these events that are desperately working to black out one side and to magnify the other. And it's leading to an explosion like we've never seen in the United States. All of this coverage, 77% of the evening news last night in America, and ignoring all of these other pressing stories of the day, the Media Research Center said, for instance, CBS and NBC completely omitted how overnight the murderous North Korean regime blinked and backed down in their game of chicken with the United States. That was not covered last night on the news. They noted it during their Tuesday morning broadcast, but left only ABC to cover it by evening. One would think the possible aversion of a nuclear attack would be major news. You would think. In normal times, you would think that would be major news. You would think that that would be headline news. As it was, the main news, the major news last night, and I'm sure it'll be the same this morning or today, was this press conference that you just heard. MRC goes on to say here, they also ignored the radical leaders of Iran threatening to pull out of the nuclear agreement. According to Fox News Channel's Rich Edson of Special Report, Iran's president threatens its restored nuclear program would be more dangerous than the one suspended 2 years ago. We covered that with you yesterday, didn't we? Not the evening news in the United States. Not at all. They're too busy. They're too busy trying to sling mud at the president. He also noted how their parliament chanted death to America as they voted on increasing funds for military programs. That was going on yesterday in Iran. Death to America. Let's ramp up military spending. Let's expand our force in the Atlantic. Let's fire off some ballistic missiles. Nary a peep on the evening news. Nothing. MRC says, and it had been a day since Politico published a damaging story about how the Obama team was warned in 2014 about Russian interference and did little to stop it. Here's the Obama administration being warned that Russia was going to try to interfere. Not at the end of last year. Not in 2015. In 2014. And the administration did nothing to stop it. There was no explicit warning of a threat to U.S. elections, they wrote. This is according to Politico, a left-wing publication. But the official said some diplomats and national security officials in Moscow felt the administration was too quick to dismiss the possibility that the Kremlin incursions could reach the United States. That's from a Politico piece on, I think, early Monday. Nothing about that. On the evening news last night. Nothing about it on the evening news Monday night. It says, and for all of their coverage of the Trump's press conference, the big three networks didn't discuss the president's infrastructure proposal in any detail. Well, you heard it. Next, please. A question on infrastructure. Yes, tell me about your chief advisor. Do you still have confidence in him? Given the climate that we're in, racially, that's how it went. It says, ABC and this is the final quote from MRC. ABC and NBC also admitted Trump's strong words condemning the murderer who drove his car into a crowd of counter-protesters in the ISIS-style attack. And then it quotes what Donald Trump had to say. He's a disgrace. He's a disgrace to himself. He's a disgrace to his family. He's a disgrace to this country. Call it what you want. Terrorism, murder, whatever you want. The driver of the car is a murderer. And what he did is a horrible, horrible, inexcusable thing. Nothing about that part of the press conference on ABC last night. Or NBC. Two of the three big networks. Nothing. That's the state of news media today. In the United States of America. Ben Shapiro had a piece posted, I believe, just today, talking about the evil on both sides, something the major media says we can't do. He says the alt-right's evil, white supremacy's evil, neo-Nazism is evil. Okay, he establishes that in the first paragraph. And then he moves on to more facts. Antifa is a loosely connected band of anti-capitalist protesters generally on the far left who dubbed themselves anti-fascist after their compatriots in Europe. They've been around in the United States since the 1990s, protesting globalization and burning trash cans at World Trade Center organization meetings, but they've kicked it into high gear over the past 2 years. And then he talks about all of the speeches that they've shut down because of their violent protesting, including one for Charles Murray, a scientist of all things. They shut him down. It says here in Charlottesville, Antifa engaged in street violence with the alt-right racists. As in Weimar Germany, fascists flying the swastika engaged in hand-to-hand combat with Antifa members flying the communist red. The fascist against the communists. That was what was on display for all to see, and the president saw it. And just saying what he saw is the cause of all the outrage in the major media. Just passing along what a New York Times reporter tweeted about. That's the cause of all the outrage in the radical leftist media. It says Antifa is a hateful group, but that wouldn't fit the convenient narrative Antifa promotes and the media buy. This is Ben Shapiro. He says that the sole threat to the republic comes from the racist right. That's the narrative. The only thing threatening our republic is the racist right. Perhaps that's why the media ignored the events in Sacramento, Berkeley, and Seattle. That sort of biased coverage only engenders more militancy from the alt-right. And so as the alt-right, this is me now, as the alt-right gains momentum, then you have more and more. It engenders more militancy on the radical left. Here's the moral solution. Well, he concludes by saying both sides are evil and both sides should be denounced. And that's all that the president has done, including with his statement Saturday night, carrying on until the one Monday, and then, of course, with that wild exchange yesterday. It's a toxic mix. It's about to explode, and we've got to brace ourselves for it. We've got to prepare ourselves for it. We've got to rise above it and not pick sides. We've got to view these events the way that God views them. If ever there's a time we need God's perspective, if ever there's a time we need the love of God, now is the time. Melanie Phillips had an alert today from her website. She sent out an email and gave credit to The Atlantic magazine, which just ran a piece by Peter Beinart. He's, again, a left-wing journalist, and I didn't bring the title along with me, but he's talking about the rise of violence on the radical left. Congratulations to The Atlantic for at least printing this, and for Peter Beinart to get into it, because not very many are. Melanie Phillips, regarding that piece, says, for Beinart warns that the left is lurching into totalitarianism and violence. Antifa purport to be anti-fascist, but they define as fascist anyone they disagree with, including mainstream conservatives. And that, like I read to you yesterday from another piece by Ms. Phillips, that's the real target here. They want to bring, it's like my father said in America Under Attack and in Great Again, they want to bring the system down. They want to bring the government down. And so in response to what President Trump brought out there in that exchange, first it's the Confederate soldier, then it's the statue of Robert E. Lee, then it's the Jefferson Memorial, then it's the Washington Monument, because it's the whole government that's evil, the way that they see it on the radical left. The whole system needs to be brought down. It shows you just how prescient that booklet was from 2012 or 13. America Under Attack. That's who's under attack here. It's the greatest single superpower in the history of this world. Great because of the promises that God brought upon our people. Thanks to promises, or rather I say blessings, thanks to the promises God made to Abraham, the great patriarch Abraham, who looked to God in faith, who trusted God, who waited on God. Well, she brings out, Melanie Phillips does, that Antifa is not there to defend, certainly not to defend democracy or these institutions of America's founding. She quotes here. This is Melanie Phillips quoting from the left-wing Atlantic. Since Antifa is heavily composed of anarchists, its activists place little faith in the state, which they consider complicit in fascism and racism. They prefer direct action. This is Peter Beinart. They pressure venues to deny white supremacist space to meet. They pressure employers to fire them and landlords to evict them. And when people they deem racist and fascist manage to assemble, Antifa's partisans try to break up their gatherings, including by force. And so they go after the white supremacists. They go after the KKK. And everyone on the left, of course, cheers that. But then they go after Charles Murray. They go after Ben Shapiro. They go after Ann Coulter. It's everyone on the right that they see as fascist. You can see from Beinart's article, they take action against who they consider to be complicit even in fascism, racism. If you've got the label, you're a target. Melanie Phillips goes on to say, if this was a bunch of anarchists, the problem wouldn't be so bad. What takes this on to a different level altogether is the fact that the mainstream left does not disavow Antifa, but tolerates, sanitizes, and condones it. And you just heard that, didn't you? You heard it in that press conference. Well, now, are you saying that what you call the alt-left, are you saying they're up there with the white supremacist groups? They can't even bring themselves to say it. They can't even bring themselves to label them unless they're on the far right. And it's full-on outrage aimed at Trump if he doesn't label them. The height of hypocrisy. What a double standard. She goes on to quote again from Beinart's piece. Such tactics have elicited substantial support from the mainstream left. When the masked Antifa activist was filmed assaulting Spencer, that's Richard Spencer, one of the leaders of a white supremacist movement, a member of Antifa, I'll just paraphrase, came up and punched him while he was being interviewed on television. And this, of course, made the rounds in the left-wing media sites as they celebrated it. They applauded it because they're for violence. As long as it's coming from the radical left, it's justified, you see. It's justified. It's okay for Antifa to show up without a permit with clubs and bats and to wear helmets and hoods. That's justified because, after all, everyone else that was there was a white supremacist. And so they need to be clubbed. They need to be punched. One side working to ramp it up, and then the other side responds. And back and forth we go. It's, as I say, a dangerous, toxic mix. But as Melanie Phillips brings out, what makes this especially frightening is you have those that are working to conceal what's actually happening. You have those in the media and the Democratic Party that tolerate this sort of thing, that condone this sort of thing. Let me read to you the conclusion from Melanie Phillips's piece. She says, Trump is the creation of the left. Melanie Phillips is no fan of Donald Trump. She's not. Ben Shapiro, obviously, is no fan of Donald Trump. But they're trying to relay the facts of what we're seeing happen. She says, Trump is a creation of the left, and the more ugly their attempt to destroy him, the more they remind us just why this man was elected. It's because the other side is outraged. And we've told you based upon Ezekiel 5, given the rise of the radical left, how long will it be for the radical right to rise up in response? It's happening. It's here. We're here. Philip says, Trump's very far from what I would have chosen as a holder of any public office. But when I see the contempt for democracy shown by those trying to lever him out, the vicious lies And frankly, deranged character assassination deployed against him and his team. The violence and the intimidation used by his opponents and the way in which the media keep the public in widespread ignorance of all of this because the media, along with the rest of the intelligentsia, have their minds hermetically sealed by the same groupthink. She says, I know who frightens me more. That's the most frightening thing of all in all this. Is this intelligentsia that have their minds hermetically sealed by the same groupthink. It's something right out of George Orwell's 1984. And that's frightening. Well, as I said earlier, there is a solution to this nightmare. Joel Hilliker is writing today's Trumpet Brief on the events in Charlottesville on Saturday and those events that have followed. If you aren't subscribing to the Trumpet Brief, that's our daily email blast that just keeps you right up to date with what's happening in the news and the significance, the true significance of it all from a prophetic standpoint. What does God say? What is God's perspective? If you don't already subscribe, visit thetrumpet.com and you'll have a little window or a box that pops up asking for you to subscribe to our newsletter, our email, our daily email blast, The Trumpet Brief. Every day you get a brief synopsis of one of the hot stories of the day. 700, 800, 900 words. You can get through it in 5 minutes, and at the end of the email, we'll tell you also what's at our website. If you haven't subscribed yet, go to thetrumpet.com and become one of our many Trumpet Brief subscribers. But as he brings out in today's brief, it'll be going out in a few hours. But as he brings out, you can look at what's happening in Charlottesville. You can look at what's happening in our world today. You can look at what's happening in your nation, in our nations, and clearly see that this world, that the United States, that the United Kingdom, this world is not being governed by God. This is not God's world. 2 Corinthians 4:4, it's exactly what the Bible says. Revelation 12 says the devil has deceived the whole world. And we're coming very near to the end of this age, this present civilization, a time when God says, through his prophets, that racial division and strife and hatred and violence, it's going to get much worse. It's going to be just as it was in the days leading up to the flood. Go back and read Genesis 6. God says there that the minds of men were on evil and violence continually. And God had to purge the entire earth, save for 8 people in Noah's family, because of sin, because of human nature, as influenced by the god of this world, the devil. You look at this world today and there is sin to go around. Can you imagine the Apostle Paul writing in the book of Romans saying that, well, you know what? Half of the group has sinned and the other half, they're without sin. What did Paul say? In Romans 3, he said, all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. What did the prophet Jeremiah say in Jeremiah 17? He said, it's the human heart, whether you're on the right side or the left or anywhere in between. It's the heart of man. It's the mind of man. It's the problem here. It's human nature as influenced by the god of this world. And these problems will not be solved until human nature is changed. And the Bible prophesies of that. That's the great hope that there is in God's word. That's the great hope that there is in the return of Christ and the establishment of God's kingdom on earth. And so we wait on God. We trust in God. We look to God to solve these problems. We don't take matters into our own hands. Not God's people. Not true Christians. We don't take sides. We don't cheer for one side over the other. We report facts. We expose evil that's on both sides. And the President of the United States should be congratulated for doing that. At least for shining a light on it. Jobs are not going to solve it. It's not going to be fixed with some humanly devised program. It's not going to be fixed by throwing money at it. But at least there was a leader in America yesterday who stood up and said, look, there's plenty of evil to go around. That's what Paul was saying in Romans 3:23. All have sinned and come short of the glory of God. In his trumpet brief, which goes out in a few hours, Joel Hilliker says today, to trust in violence is to distrust God. We will never attain God's kingdom by using force contrary to God's perfect law of love. God is not deaf. He hears the cry of the oppressed. He heard the white people of ancient Israel when they were enslaved by the Egyptians, and he did deliver them. But it was in his time. It was in his way. We can't dictate to the great God when and how he should deliver. We must leave that job to him. And then Mr. Hilliker asked, will you trust God? If you will, then his way or of simply waiting on deliverance from him rather than taking matters into your own hands will make sense. Yes, indeed, God's way makes sense. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. You can email the program, if you like, with your feedback or comments to td@kpcg.fm. Thanks for joining us today, and we'll see you tomorrow.